Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, dominant pop and podcast guests, are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, Chris, here we are, another week of the Urban Complex podcast. What are you excited about?
Well, there's two things. One's a little bit bummed. For the first time since we started this in January, we didn't have a podcast. A little bummed about that. But kind of, you know, things come up and we had someone had to change schedule at the last minute. So that's kind of interesting. But we'll get back in the swing, and we've got so many. I think we got a little lazy with the Smart City Expo coming up in Atlanta that we were going to fill with everyone because we knew all these people were going to meet. But on the flip side, that is positive. We crossed 500 followers on LinkedIn, and it's fun to see how the snowball is starting. When the guests come on, they're getting more presence when they publish as well. And it's just cool to see the reaction to what we're doing. I know it's been a journey for us to learn what works and what doesn't and get great guests, but if we keep having great guests, have fun and follow the script that works, it just seems to be working. So that's kind of what's on my mind. How about you?
Yeah, that's awesome. No, you know, it's been such a fun journey, just learning as we're growing and kind of the exciting part to see it continuing to grow. So I'm excited for the upcoming guests that we have booked and seeing where these conversations could take us. I mean, as long as we're having fun, this is awesome.
Exactly. So well, and we just keep meeting new people, just like our guest today. Like, I didn't know her before the show. Well, technically not true. She wanted to just get a glimpse into what it was. But we both know Lev Gonick really well. And Lev founded Digital C. And they just made this huge announcement, and I'll kind of wait to in the show to kind of share what that's about. Let Dorothy tell herself. But Dorothy Bennick, she's CEO of Digital C, and I didn't know her before. She's great. She knows what she's doing. She's known Lev forever. I guess they've been cohorts in crime, doing smart city stuff and connectivity broadband work since 2003. So pretty wild.
Well, that's awesome. Should we bring her on?
Let's do it.
Awesome.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Hi, Dorothy. Please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex.
Thank you, Chris.
And obviously, for those watching or those listening, unfortunately, Dom got called into something last minute. So he's not here, but he wishes he was. And so we're just going to go through and make this as normal as possible without my co-host, but I think it'll be fine. So, Dorothy, glad to have you. We've found that our audience loves to know about who we have on. So why don't you start with a little bit of information about you? Like, what do you want our audience to know about you as a person, your background? And obviously we'll talk about Digital C and the Cleveland Water Alliance soon. So
thank you, Chris. So I guess the first thing to know about me is that I've been a resident of the city of Cleveland almost my whole life. I went away to college, lived abroad for a couple of years with my husband, and took a stint out to California when he was in the Air Force. But by and large, I'm a Cleveland, Ohio, born, bred, and still living here girl. So that's number one. Number two is I'm actually heading toward a 40-year career in tech-based economic development. It got interrupted for a minute with a little bit of a retirement where I still consulted, but I flunked that retirement and came back strong to take on Digital C in 2017. But what I should tell you about my tech-based economic development career is that it was really focused on technology and innovation and entrepreneurship. And my technical expertise is in the biological sciences. So I was a medical researcher once in my life. I actually sold real estate. I dropped out of science and sold real estate. And about 40 years ago, I started an MBA at Case Western Reserve University and came into Cleveland at the time where they discovered we didn't really have a tech-based economy. We didn't have a whole lot of entrepreneurship. We didn't have any venture capital. And we had a great medical research base, but we had no industry. And so that's where I started my tech-based career. And then along about 2003, I met a guy by the name of Lev Gonick. And Lev had this vision for broadband connectivity for Cleveland. And when he started to talk about broadband, this city looked at him like this manufacturing city. And I come from a foundry family. So they looked at this guy like, broadband, what's that? And what could it ever have to do with economic development? And so Lev and I started an activity called One Cleveland that became One Community when we decided we want to be more regional. And I was on the board of that those organizations on and off for years, but never did I dream that when Lev started Digital C in 2015 to really refocus our efforts, because we had built a pretty substantial middle mile, but never got to the last mile. Never did I dream that I was going to be the chief executive that followed Lev Gonick. So that's one thing. And then when the board actually in 2017, Lev decided to go to Arizona for more sunshine and warmer winters. And the board had this little session where we decided that we were going to take what Lev had envisioned and kick the can down the road a little bit and see what we should do with all these great ideas and where should we focus. Never dreamed that I'd be
surprise coming out of retirement.
Yeah.
Lev has a way to do that. That's how I chuckle, because for those that don't know, Lev Gonick is my ASU, Arizona State University boss. And he's the one that introduced us to Dorothy. So it's funny how all roads lead to Dorothy, all roads lead to Lev. Via Dorothy, we had Joshua Edmonds on. He knew Lev. So funny, small world.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it was a 3 to 6 month consulting gig. 4 years later, I'm going to scale a WISP. And 4 years ago, I couldn't spell WISP. I didn't even know what one was. And now I'm scaling one for the city of Cleveland. So I think that's the background in that when I took a look at all these things and saw that Cleveland had bounced around in the top five least connected major cities in the country, and then we hit dead last in the American Community Survey Index data in 2019, there was no doubt in my mind that we had to figure out how we were going to become a city that was inclusive and that where everybody had access to broadband internet, because you can't live in the 21st century without it. So that's probably the best intro here.
Yeah, sure. Wow, so you definitely have the right experience for where you are today. So let's explain what Digital C is and how do you see your role in meeting the organization's goals?
Yeah. So the whole purpose of Digital C at this point is to make Greater Cleveland's digital future equitable. And we do that three ways. One is by making sure that we can connect every household in this city to broadband internet. So that if somebody wants access and wants to be part of the digital economy, they should have affordable and reliable access. The second way that we do it is we know that connectivity alone isn't enough. So once you start to close that digital divide, you have to meet people where they are. And we break the population up into three segments: seniors, scholars, and strivers. And the strivers is that working group in the middle that might be a caregiver for a scholar or a student, might be a caregiver for a senior, or might be both, because in Cleveland there are many multi-generational families. But meet everyone in that family where they are and then make sure they find the pathway across the digital divide to better health, better education, and better economic opportunity. So that's the fundamental principle. And then the third leg of that stool for us, and this was another Lev commitment, was that right in the middle of four of the poorest neighborhoods in Cleveland, right along that manufacturing corridor where manufacturers supplied the auto industry and where when they discovered oil in the flats in Cleveland, Millionaires Row ran right along Euclid Avenue, and actually the backbone of the internet runs along Euclid Avenue. We established a tech hive. So it's a co-working space, a community gathering space that's welcoming and diverse, and it even has a coffee shop, just like one of those resurging neighborhoods might have, or a downtown neighborhood might have. And it's our place-based piece of the strategy. So that all plays together as we work to fulfill this dream of making our future equitable.
I love it. Well, so let's kind of steer in now then. So that's a little bit about DLC. We've heard about you. Huge win. I look at your website. There's so much news about this $20 million. I guess Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Foundation and the David and Inez Myers Foundation. Tell us what's that money for? And, you know, what do you do to plan to meet the needs of digital inclusion with the funding?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and it's what I've raised a couple hundred million dollars for organizations along the way in 38 years, never 20 million in one fell swoop for an organization I've run. So this was pretty exciting when we announced that at the end of July. What I learned along the way, though, is that the Mandel Foundation and the Myers Foundation started due diligence about a year ago. And if you think about a year ago, right, March, April, when the digital divide became totally exposed by COVID-19, where people didn't understand that we were the least connected city in the country, and we were trying to explain that, and they didn't understand what that meant. When kids came home from school and not only didn't have a way to access schoolwork, they didn't even know where to go for lunches.
All right.
Because if you live in the city that's not only the least connected, but has the highest poverty rate and the highest rate of child poverty, you've got many, many problems that you have to deal with all at one time that a pandemic just lays bare. So the Mandel Foundation said, well, there's got to be a solution to this. And Mandel Foundation is a very large foundation, a global foundation. And actually, the Mandel brothers ran a manufacturing facility right here in Midtown. Wow. And so it kind of comes back to our roots. And they said, what can we do to help solve this? And they looked around and they saw the model that we had, because we were fortunate enough to have some dollars from the sale of that middle mile, the one community middle mile, to a for-profit company, to sit here and say, we can do something of significance. What is the most significance? And so we set out to prove that you could actually deliver fixed wireless internet to the city of Cleveland, that we didn't have to dig up the streets, the old streets, the old infrastructure, and put fiber in. It'd be way too expensive. But there was technology that could take internet to the home reliably through fixed wireless technology. And our board kept saying, implement, 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 show that you can do this. And Mandel's watched that progress. And many people then, when they found out there was a problem, thought they had a solution. But, you know, they have plans, and many people are doing different things than they ever did to try to address this. But we came up with a model that they believed in, and they believed in the team that was doing it. And I think that's the significant piece. But the other thing that's really important about this $20 million is, as everyone knows, with ARPA dollars and the infrastructure dollars and all the money that the federal government is now willing to invest in broadband, they wanted to make a statement that they were betting on us, but they also wanted to be sure that we had an opportunity to build the right public-private partnership to get this done. And they were going to be the private sector partner that made the initial investment for us to scale our organization so that we would be shovel ready when the dollars came down
for sure,
for the CapEx and the rest of the expenses to buy the household equipment. And so strategically, I think that was a brilliant move. And so we're sitting here. We actually, on our own dime, hired 25 people during the pandemic. And I have a proud story to tell you about that. But what we've got now is the foundation to go out and raise the dollars to get the job done, an 18-month full deployment, all 34 neighborhoods in the city of Cleveland. We've got 6 neighborhoods covered now, and we're really excited and thankful that the Mandel and the Myers Foundations decided to invest.
You know, it takes that vision and community approach to make it happen. I'm for those that are watching, they'll know I'm not where I normally am with a weird backdrop. I'm actually sitting up in the Yavapai School District and their Education Technology Consortium. And they similarly got $20 million in funding, but from state from their County CARES Act. And they've used that to get an additional $10 million, all for broadband to the home delivery for those that did not have very rural here in this county. It's the size of New Jersey, this county, and but it's very distributed. So they're excited.
Wow.
Similarly, they're doing something big. And but it's great to hear what you've done. I'm sure that it's very different in the approach. I mean, love how you shared that it's that can you looked at different options. You're doing it more the wireless delivery, which is exciting in itself.
Yeah, the technology is really the tool, right? And urban and rural and, you know, not densely populated areas as well as sparsely populated areas all need internet access. And you just have to figure out what the best solution. It's not a cookie cutter approach.
Yeah, we've lived where so many, it's interesting, you just don't see it, but so many have not been part of this revolution. And it's not surprising that there's so many people that feel disenfranchised. And living your life through a smartphone is just not the way to leverage the tools that are out there. So the broadband's necessary.
Absolutely. And the sad statistic from Cleveland is 31% of the population has no access, has no internet subscription, not even a cell phone.
Wow, 31%.
31%.
Wow.
50,000 households, none.
Oh. Well, I have a hunch I know what you're going to say. We're going to kind of go gear slightly different, a little broader. The podcast is around smart cities, and we always ask our guests, you know, what is their view on smart cities? What are they? What's working? What's not? Tell us about your mindset. What is a smart city, and how is Dorothy and Digital C looking at that?
So one of the many things that Lev had started was a smart city initiative in Cleveland and even a smart region initiative. And actually the middle mile broadband that was put in with one community was the foundation for that. We connected all the hospitals in Northeast Ohio, even the rural hospitals. And we have an incredible healthcare base in Cleveland and Northeast Ohio. And you know, a smart city, if you stop and think about our goals, it's better health, better education, better economic opportunity. That's a better life for everyone. And a smart city should contribute to that. But a smart city is the future. And for a city like Cleveland that has had to struggle and reinvent itself out of an industrial city, a manufacturing city, and we still are a manufacturing city, and we do that smartly through 3D printing and things that we never thought that we would do. So, you know, smart technology comes in many forms, but before we can become the smart city, we have to be an inclusive city. And I think that's where I am on this, is that we will someday be a smart city. There's no doubt about it. And we'll have all the bells and whistles, and actually the 10 gig middle mile infrastructure that we're putting in, the fiber rings in the sky, you should be able to hang all kinds of smart technology off that. So that'll be terrific. We'll contribute there. But it also needs to be an inclusive city where everybody can participate in the benefits of that. And so that's really, we're trying to work on that part of it, knowing that the rest of the technology, you know, the smart city will come. Right. And that's not where our focus has been for the last 10 or 20 years.
So it sounds like Digital C has been focused on kind of that middle mile, the foundation. And then recently you've seen the opportunity for the inclusion side. And so that's clear. Is there anything else that Digital C has been doing that you want to highlight? I mean, beyond those areas, I know that there's been, been operating for quite some time. I would bet there's been some other smart initiatives you might want to highlight.
Yeah. So, I mean, my favorite, and this is the one where I really got bought into what Lev was doing in the Digital C phase of life, was water technology. So Cleveland, Ohio sits on Lake Erie. And in the Great Lakes lies 20% of the world's fresh water. And one of the things that Lev and Brian Stubbs from the Water Alliance put together was a program called Erie Hack. And it was really an innovative program to think about how you could make a smart lake as we thought through it. So what are the innovations that you need to keep your water clean, safe? We have algae blooms because we have a large, Ohio's basically a farm state. And a lot, you know, in the Western Basin, there's a lot of runoff that comes in and causes algae blooms every year. So, and every body of fresh water has to be clean and safe. And so what are the innovations around technology and smart technology that collect data and give you feedback and allow you to do better things? And so it was really in 2016 when I saw what Lev and Brian Stubbs were doing, and I just finished running a small company, and I looked at that. I was sitting on the board, and I said to Brian and Lev, I said, I can help you guys more on the ground. This is so exciting than I can on the board. So then I jumped off the Water Alliance board, and we started this whole Smart Lake Initiative. And I think that if you think about it, through Lake Erie, we can kind of back into the city, into a, you know, smart lake to smart city approach. So, you know.
So what did you do? Where did you connect? That wasn't done before. That's really interesting.
So we actually, we went to Sandusky Harbor and started to put in sensors and other things. And actually by the water crib in Cleveland, the water intake, and there's a number of buoys with different sensors on them that sense what's, you know, senses what's in the water. And then you give that feedback to the water department and they can look to see if there's rising levels of whatever. And then you can mitigate the issue, you know, depending on how you decide the best mitigation technique is. And what we do is these innovation challenges every other year, the Erie Hack challenges. There's one that's about to launch now. Obviously, it's going to be a little different than it was in 2019 pre-pandemic, but this would be around innovation around the lake. We, you know, innovate the lake. What do we do? And how do we make a smart lake? And there's other examples that we've looked at, Lake George, IBM, so many people contribute. And if you think about Lake Erie, some of the oldest and largest industrial cities sit on it, Buffalo, Erie, Cleveland, Detroit, and then you go up around to the Canadian side in Ontario. So it's a total water basin approach to seeing who can come up with the best innovation around the lake. It's a very exciting competition.
That's great. So I guess that tells us a little bit about the Cleveland Water Alliance too. Those complex initiatives, like what do you think the secret sauce is? How do you organize successfully as a nonprofit to align, to make sure the city gets behind what you're doing? I mean, the partners have to come together. There's technology involved. I mean, if you weren't like that, the money wouldn't come. So what's the secret sauce? How do you make all this happen? What should our listeners be thinking if they're trying to recreate something or just do it different?
It's all about partnerships. And you have to have partnerships all the way from public sector leaders to private sector leaders, the business community, the big institutions. Everybody needs to get on board. And, banks, foundations, it's an all hands on deck effort. But what's different about this public-private partnership and the leadership component of it is that if you're going to connect neighborhoods and neighborhoods that are disenfranchised and left behind and where you have to rebuild trust, people in the neighborhoods don't look like me. And so when we send in our teams of people, they're usually young people that came from the neighborhoods, grew up in those neighborhoods without internet because they know the neighborhoods. And you give them some sales skills and you give them the right technology, and that's great. But then you have to build the partnerships at the neighborhood level, build trust. And this really happens in the community service organizations that are in the neighborhoods, the faith-based community, the churches become a big part of it. It's the grassroots partnerships that make this distinctive from the typical public-private partnership. Because if you're going to grow a biomedical industry, you know, that's the head of all the healthcare institutions coming together with the biomedical companies and all the CEOs. And Cleveland, for a long time, its comeback was built around CEO participation. But this is true neighborhood engagement and people engagement, because it's about the people. And you want to make sure that you're meeting the people's needs and desires. And so we've gone in and we've done kitchen table conversations in one neighborhood, 300 of them. talking to people every day and night.
300 kitchen conversations? Wow.
300 kitchen table conversations.
Wow.
And asked, what do you want your neighborhood to look like? What, not about technology. You don't lead with technology. But everyone wants a safe neighborhood. They want a neighborhood where you know your neighbors, like you used to be able to, you know, have neighborhood block parties and be safe. They want their kids to have a great education. They want economic prosperity and businesses in the neighborhoods. They want access to jobs. They want access to food. We have food deserts in these neighborhoods. And if you stop and talk to people and you think about what, then add the layer of technology that can enhance those dreams and make those dreams come true and show them that technology is not a scary thing or not a thing that's beyond their reach. That's when it really gets real. And like I said, getting them connected to the internet is one thing, but figuring out, meeting them where they are and showing them the pathway across the bridge, first close the divide, but if it's still there, take them across the bridge to whatever they need. It's life-changing. And that's what's so exciting about this. I think that's why this is maybe the most exciting project I've worked on in my career from a technology perspective, because it means something to everyday people.
Yeah,
and I grew up one of those everyday people and just got lucky along the way. So that's the secret sauce.
How about, there's probably another secret sauce if you go just a step deeper. How do you create the culture and or the incentive? Doesn't have to be financial. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's this tech hive and the coffee. Maybe you just got the best coffee to get people. What is it that's the glue that keeps people coming back to be your ambassadors? Is it pay? Is it the mission? Is it something else? Like what's the culture like
that's,
to make
that's
that
a great question. I think the culture, because a culture of inclusivity where everybody's ideas count, don't discount the young kids in the neighborhoods that just haven't had access because they're innovative. I was asked to judge the fourth to sixth grade STEM learning program for the summer for the Cleveland schools. I went to the Cleveland schools. And the Cleveland schools get a bad rap. They're one of our best partners. When COVID shut the schools down, the school CEO came to us and he said, Dorothy, how fast can you build this network? Our board said, Dorothy, if we invest all this money in this network, will anyone come? Give me a COVID virus. And it's like, how fast can you build it, right? But you, if you give people the opportunity, they will innovate and they will work. And so I judge these science projects. Their project was to take the hatching of an egg and think about it, learn from it, and build a business around it. Six different schools. I didn't even know the word entrepreneurship or marketing or when I was in fourth to sixth grade. It's incredible what young people can do if just given the opportunity. So I think that that's the, you just have to have that empathetic view and know that people aren't looking for handouts. They'll pay what they can afford. But if the difference in affordability is a grocery bill, if you have to pay $60 a month for your basic internet service, and it's really not broadband, or you can pay less than $20 and you get the broadband and then someone shows you how to use it and cares about you, I think that's the difference. And we're really creating the future for all the carriers that can have all the bells and whistles on their network, because we're not bundling up. We're not selling content. This is about the people. And how do you get people access to what they need so that they can do what all people do? Everybody wants to live a better life. Everybody wants better economic opportunity. And they'll find a way if you provide the roadmap and the opportunity.
You have the money. You have the organization, you have the partnerships, you have the willing, engaged communities. So now it's time to go do it. Any advice or how?
There's one last thing we need. Oh. Nope, there's one last thing. We have 20 million. It's a $70 million plan. So the public sector, must deliver. So all the dollars coming down from the federal government are not necessarily going to go into not-for-profit ISPs.
Gotcha.
And I think that the challenge and the roadblocks that we still have ahead of us to make sure that the public sector dollars not only flow to Cleveland, as one urban area, but to your area in Arizona, to rural areas in Ohio, to other urban areas, those dollars must flow and there must be competition in this marketplace in order for us to survive and thrive.
But so with all that, what do you advise to keep the momentum? You know, it's just organizing and that's got to feel great, but now you've got really hard work ahead of you.
Yes.
To get to continue the funds. I didn't realize you still had 50 million more to go.
We have 50 million to go.
But as well, like, it's not like it's just this magic carpet rolls out and it just gets implemented. Any advice to folks on this phase of how you're going to approach the execution and keep the success going now that the big announcements have been made?
Yeah, that's a great question because all eyes are on us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
and some people hope you succeed and others may not. but that's the challenge. So as we got to this point, we were on what we called the pay as we go and grow model. So we were raising as many dollars as we could to live the plan, to get those six neighborhoods connected and then get people connected and show the model work and get them computers and get them training and, you know, everything that you need to get across the digital divide. Now the issue is, or the opportunity is, that in six neighborhoods, when everybody hears about this, everybody wants it. And we know we can scale. We've got the 18-month plan to scale. We've got the technology plan that's been vetted by world-class technology experts. And then it's raising the dollars and hoping that others will believe the way Mandel and Myers did, that we're going to be able to do this. And we just have to keep implementing and succeed. So at every step, every step has to be success. It's one small step at a time. $20 million doesn't make the whole thing happen. But I think the leadership that our board and the community is providing, the statement that the Mandel and Myers Foundation made is significant. And then will others follow? You know, if you build it, will they come? If you've got leadership and a dream, will other people follow you to achieve that dream? I think so. I believe that every day. Otherwise, I wouldn't show up to work every day during a pandemic and work with this incredible group of people. And I think that's what it takes, is just believing every day that the next step is going to get you closer. And magically, who knew that we were under due diligence for a year while we were scraping and raising funds, you know, $10,000 and $15,000 at a time to build out this network, right? And then all of a sudden, you get the windfall. And I think if we just keep going, the rest will happen. So stay tuned, see what happens. Yeah.
Hard work. People don't realize this dream goes back to 2003, if not earlier. So
yes,
it's amazing how these big ideas were years in the making, and you just keep plugging away. Think big, start small, and keep it
going. So. Keep going. Just keep going.
All right. Well, we do have a question we ask all our guests as we kind of wrap up. Is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of that you also think may be a great guest on the show? We always like to see that as well. So they don't have to be the same, but you know, as you've learned about the urban complex, we always look for great ideas of who might be of interest too.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I saw that on the list, Chris, and I was thinking about all the great people that have provided leadership to Digital C along the way. Of course, there's Lev. But there were board members, and I think about in 2003, the CIO of Progressive Insurance Company, Ray Volker, who took this on as a volunteer project, the whole One Cleveland, One Community, and just retired in 2019 from the board, but saw this thing through. Paul Clark, a banker, in 2004, Scott Rourke was the CEO at that time, and he called us to his office. And he said, you know, I think what you're doing with this broadband stuff is great. Our foundation wants to give you $1 million. It's like, we looked at each other. It was like,
thank you. Did we hear that right?
Yeah, thank you. And then Paul, fast forward to 2017, and we opened the Tech Hive. Paul is now CEO of PNC Bank, Regional Bank in Cleveland. And I look on my list of people that signed up online, and here's Paul Clark's name. And I said, I called him and I said, what do you mean you're getting a desk in the Tech Hive? He said, you know, I work downtown in that building on the 30-something floor, and I go out to my home, and that's on the way. And I stopped in one day and I loved the vibe and I loved the culture there. And he said, I can go there. No one knows who I am. No one knows, you know, where I am. And I go and I work and I've met so many great people.
Well, you've told the story in the urban complex now. He's going to get flooded.
He's retired now. He actually retired a couple of years ago.
But he's still in the tech hive. They're going to find
him,
right?
No, actually, he just during COVID, he took his office out and took it home.
Have you memorialized
Have
you memorialized the space yet?
But, you know, but I thought of him. I actually thought of him on the day the Mandela and Myers Foundations. I'm going to tell you one other story about an incredible man that might be of interest. So Albert Ratner, who was one of the founders in the family of the Forest City Company. And you may know that Cleveland's called the Forest City, and those pesky little tree leaves have been giving us problems with our internet signals. We've got ways around them that we're going to work on. But Albert's 93 years old. And Albert has been an incredible inspiration to me personally this past year because he is convinced, along with the Mandel and Myers Foundations, that we can do this. And he's the person that's been in the background with the public sector helping us just believe that the dollars will come if we just execute every day and do the plan and do it right. So, and he's a brilliant man. He just wrote a book on longevity with a famous doctor from the Cleveland Clinic. So you might want to talk to Albert because he'll open the thing by saying he just is so humble, but he's just been such a part of Cleveland's history. He's one of the longest term greats, and I've known many, but that would be my vote.
That was a great. Okay, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Dorothy Bonnick, CEO of Digital Sea and board member of the Cleveland Water Alliance. Dorothy, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
Okay, so Chris, Dorothy, Digital Seed, how did that go?
Well, yeah, let's start with the elephant in the room. For those that watch and we're getting here, they won't see you and they'll see me in a different location in different shirt. What foreshadowing in our intro, talking about how last week got canceled and here why we had a total kind of chaos of you got pulled into an emergency meeting. I got called up to Yavapai County to go pitch this office of digital teaching and learning. So we figured we'd do the same outfit. We normally do it all in one day, but it was all wacky. And so we use the same outfits as the intro. Kind of funny, but yeah, you know, things come up, right?
Yep. Secrets of podcasting.
The show must go on. Dorothy was amazing. I think from what you and Lev, first of all, you know, she knows Lev really well. I know we're going to see him soon in the football games. That's exciting too. We have to say hi from Dorothy to him and thank him for getting us, Dorothy. But with your work with digital inclusion and scale in the Phoenix area, I think you're going to love what we talked through. So one of the huge announcements I referred to in the intro, they closed $20 million in funding with the Jack Joseph and Morton Mandel Foundation and the David and Inez Myers Foundation. It was really interesting. She talked about the story that those groups were actually doing the research. They didn't find, Digital Sea didn't find them. They actually found Digital Sea. They were doing research in the area. I guess Cleveland is one of the least connected cities in the country, which is pretty sad. And Lev and Dorothy have been working together since 2003 for connectivity. And then they've really been focused on digital inclusion of late. And Digital Sea has really had track record of success. So I think the moral of the story is when you're at it for a long time, it feels, she was talking about how they were slogging away, getting $15,000 of investment and whatnot. And then boom, 20 million falls in the lap. But the crazy thing is it's still not enough. They're looking for a pool of 70 million total to address the gap that they see. So just a little bit of there. I don't know if you want to make any comments on that might relate, but.
No, you know, I've known about the organization for quite some time, obviously through Lev, but just been so impressed of what they've been able to do and how they've been able to structure kind of an organization to drive continuous innovation in digital equity, digital inclusion, and connectivity. you know, a lot of what we're doing here in standing up the Digital Equity Institute and having an organization that wakes up every day thinking about how to close the digital divide, sort of like Digital C, again, building that presence in the region and in the States. So that way, hopefully people come and find it. We modeled it so closely after Digital C. So it's great to hear Dorothy do so well.
Yeah, I think another thing, she was excited. She talked a little bit about some of the non-digital inclusion work that they were doing, and it hit home to me. I used to live in the Florida Keys. She took Lake Erie and started doing all this connective water studies, and actually sent that to into the group that does the water management, and help them see how technology can look at algal blooms so that they can actually react to it. I thought that was really interesting. That was something she was proud of. She's actually a scientist. She's been in tech for a long time, but the science side of tech. So it's great to see the mix of science, tech, and trying to solve something like mass water with the Lake Erie. That was pretty exciting. But finally, I do think it's important. She did talk. We asked a question near the end, or I asked a question. I think it was your idea. But what culturally leads to getting a $20 million investment? Because I think the opportunity to do that more and more around the nation is going to be there, whether it comes direct from foundations or from tech companies or from federal funds. But and one of the things she just talked about is getting people on board. There was a cultural element in it, and it was really interesting. So they would get people that looked and felt like the community to go out into the community. So they train younger kids of color potentially. And she said one day, that sounded a little longer, maybe it was a weekend or something, but they did 300 kitchen table conversations to talk about what do they want to see? What do they want from their city? Not what tech do you want? Not what's a smart city mean to them, but what do they want? And resounding, you know, it's access to jobs, access to food, access to each other, like bring forward the community, make it safe. So they really understood the community, and they had this groundswell that and this reputation. So they had all the levels engaged, right? They've got the great partnerships. They've been working with the tech companies for a long time, and then boom, magically comes big money. And so for them, it was building the foundation. And then when the time was right, that boom, they plug in and accelerate. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how all that long work leads to great, great outcomes for the city of Cleveland.
Yeah, that's so terrific. And I can't, you know, reiterate how important it is, that idea of having the community participate in these efforts and actually have the community reach out to the community. We're learning that as well in some of our work around Maryville, that we started to partner with the school district, and then we recruited individuals from the community to help us in our efforts. We're actually be canvassing this weekend, trying to get homes that might not have internet connectivity signed up to the program, where we're providing them a network service. So I just think it's so terrific. And Digital C is such a shining example for a lot of us around the country of how to do it right.
Yeah, it was why I was up in Yavapai County. I mean, we're trying to create this Office of Digital Teaching and Learning for K-12 schools across the nation, and they appreciate it. I mean, Yavapai County is the size of New Jersey. And yeah. I was there with their education technology board and talking to them about how we can help accelerate what they're doing. They've got great, they actually just closed $20 million that they're going to parlay into 30 total million to go do the same thing that Digital C is doing to connect the unconnected up there. And they already closed the deal. So not sure if you're even aware of that, but they just closed it about 3 weeks ago. But so they're moving forward on that. But we already came up with some new ideas that I can kind of help amplify with some things we're doing with the state. So it's really exciting.
So exciting to see the momentum in this space. I mean, everyone deserves to be connected and have the skills and support necessary to succeed online. That's great. Cool.
So let's switch gears here. Let's put it back to you since you weren't there. Cracks in the Pavement. Any articles that are coming to mind?
Yeah, this one caused quite the ruckus here, at least for me and my job. There's an article that came out in our local paper, AZ Central, that said billionaire looks to Arizona as a possible location for a proposed $400 billion sustainable city. So essentially it says, it's a very short article, so not much depth here, but it says Arizona's on a short list for a new $400 billion smart city proposed by former Walmart executive Mark Lohr, which was released on September 1st. So anytime you see a number like $400 billion and you are linked to a proposed site in Arizona, it always causes quite the stir in the economic development organizations. So We've been kind of scrambling around trying to understand.
Especially when it can turn raw land that's not being used into something. I mean, don't they want, what's the scale? They want like, I think the first phase is like 1,500 acres, but I think it's
150,000 acres, roughly 234 square miles. And it ultimately
234 over square 40 miles. Years.
Yeah. So,
well, that's right. I was just looking at phase one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's total. So we've been scrambling around trying to figure out what's about, who's behind it and kind of where we might be able to take it. But what I wanted to bring this in as cracks in the pavement, because we're seeing this more and more and more about these, you know, private owners or private developers buying big pieces of land and wanting to kind of transform land into a completely connected or sustainable city from the ground up, right? Not so much looking at infill anymore, but more looking, hey, let's go find a big piece of land, maybe on the outskirts of a metropolitan region like Greater Phoenix, where we can build, you know, a completely smart, sustainable, connected city.
It's brilliant what you're doing, Dom, like with the Smart State Initiative. If the infrastructure is there where it can plug into something way bigger than just what they're trying to do. Because that's where the challenge is. If you're finding a space that big, that's a lot of raw land, right? And you're going to have a ton of work just to plug in what you want to do for yourself. But you can't completely be sustainable. Although they have big aspirations. I mean, they want all their food to be self-generated. They want all their energy to be self-generated. They want all their water to be recycled. So like what Ron Gonin was doing with Closed Loop Partners, like talk about a match made in heaven. You know, it's like, and I think they're both from New York, but I don't know. There's just some crazy stuff going on. I love this, the frame of this article, and boy, what a great thing for the state of Arizona is if you and Sandra and Chris Camacho, so Arizona Commerce Authority and Greater Phoenix Economic Council can do their magic and get and lure them over here. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting to see more and more of this kind of ideas come to life. And, you know, it reminds me of the Brenna Berman conversation. Remember how she was talking about the need to bring in the private developers into the smart city and smart region business model, because they do own big pieces of land like this. And if we're going to be successful, we need to start.
And you notice that Mark Lohr partnered with an architectural design firm that works with builders. They're starting from the beginning. They're starting with a fresh mind. It's exactly what Britta, that's a great observation. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So it's exciting. And, you know, this reminds me of projects like Novus that, you know, ASU is helping to lead. And I think we'll just see more and more of this as we move forward.
Well,
Sorry again for missing out on the exciting conversation. I'll have to ping Dorothy on the side and tell her my apologies for getting pulled away, but look forward to chatting with her more and learning from her. But what another
great episode. She seemed to have a great time, and I'm sure it'll all work out.
Cool. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks all. That's a wrap. See you next time.
Bye.